Hello and welcome to the Thursday, December 19th, 2024 edition of the SAD Synod Storm Center's Stormcast. My name is Johannes Ulrich, and today I'm recording from Washington, D.C. Another great guest diary today by one of our sands.edu undergraduate interns, this time taking apart an attack that is associated with Team TNT and spinning yarn. This particular attack attacked web server, of course, a honeypot that simulated a vulnerability that was then exploited by the attacker to install a script. This script was heavily obfuscated in order to bypass malware detection, and then was used to download additional malware. What's sort of interesting in here is that there is sort of multiple stages to install all the components needed to actually execute the malware, and then the malware went ahead and also did disable security measures on the system. In the end, the malware did install CryptoMiner and then did harvest SSH keys, clear system logs, and also execute yet another reverse shell in order to provide persistent access to the attacker. Interesting write-up on a fairly common attack and something that you definitely should be ready to detect. Typically, the CryptoCoin miner itself should trigger some anti-malware signatures. The problem there sometimes is that the standard crypto miners aren't necessarily included in these signatures because, well, they're not themselves necessarily malicious software. One quick check that you may want to run is XMRIC is the number one crypto miner that we do see being used. Make sure it gets detected on your systems. Yesterday, we had a couple stories involving AnyDesk. Well, today we switch to another favorite remote control methods for attackers, RDP. The advantage of using RDP is that, first of all, it's more normal in a Windows environment. And secondly, there's nothing to install. The entire software is already on the victim's system. What you do need to provide, however, is malicious configuration file in order to allow the attacker to access the remote RDP system. This apparently here happened according to an article by Trend Micro via phishing emails, where victims were tricked into installing the malicious configuration, and then the connection happened via proxies that the attacker set up in cloud providers, which of course made it more difficult to detect the connection as malicious. Trend Micro suspects that Russian intelligence services were behind this attack, and of course they didn't want to connect directly from Russia, but instead used these proxies. Overall, interesting attack, in particular the use of phishing emails in order to install the rogue configurations. And that's something that is, of course, often not detected and not very well controlled. RDP connections, however, well, must be controlled given how commonly they're being abused. And Okta is warning its customers of an increase in the use of its brand in phishing emails and phone calls. Apparently, there are hundreds of attempts being conducted against Okta customers. Of course, sometimes they may also hit other companies claiming to come from Okta and then tricking users into revealing IDs, in some cases, revealing ID documents like driver's licenses and passports, but also revealing two-factor authentication tokens. One thing that I kind of like here about the Okta response is that they're clarifying how they're communicating. If you are getting communications from Okta support, I think that's something that probably other companies could do too. Like, for example, list phone numbers these calls will originate from or from email addresses. Even though not bulletproof, it does help to at least detect some of these phishing attempts. And apparently there is an effort underway by the Department of Justice in the US to outlaw the sale of TP-Link devices in the US. The reasoning behind there is the high number of vulnerabilities of these devices and also the use of these devices in some recent nation-state attacks linked to China. Now, at this point, there is no evidence that there are some intentional backdoors being introduced into these devices. These are well-known vulnerabilities for the most part that are being exploited here. But then again, there is sometimes a fine line between a backdoor and the vulnerability, where the vulnerability really was just introduced as a disguised backdoor. Of course, in this space of low-cost home routers, there are many players that don't take software security as serious as they probably should take it. But TP-Link, with its affiliation with China, has sort of come into the crosshairs here. I haven't really checked if they had more vulnerabilities than others. Doesn't really sort of seem to me like it. But of course, they are a major market leader in this particular segment. And sticking a little bit more here with politics than usual, but CISA has released best practice guidance for mobile communication. This again in response to the compromises of telecom providers, and it provides some real good, I think, tips about the use of end-to-end encryption for messaging, VPNs, and the like. So definitely worthwhile checking it out, and maybe something to bring to family over the holidays. Well, and this is it for today. So thanks again for listening. Haven't fully finalized the sort of holiday schedule for the podcast yet, but there is a good chance that I will not have any podcasts next week or even wait till New Year, but there will be one tomorrow. So talk to you again tomorrow. Bye.